Music Radio Free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. Now how are we doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Educate, they fabricate. And we sit back till it's too late.
The Radio Avenger.
Rick Adams is on.
We're on the air. Now he tells me, ladies and gentlemen, Rick Adams, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And what's today? The 6th of April, 2019. Another week we survive. This world around us, this evil world. Well, you know, there are some good things in this world system, as we know. And, of course, the most beneficial, the most important thing that we can have is the truth that is in the Word of God. And I begin every program, as you know, with a little quotation of Scripture. And I've just finished the Old Covenant, the book of Malachi, the messenger of God. You know, the last chapter is fantastic, like all of the Scripture. So I begin with chapter 4, verse 1. And we are told by Malachi the prophet, "For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. And the day shall come when they shall burn up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch." 2, verse 2, "But unto you that fear my name shall the Son," S-U-N, "of righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall." Malachi chapter 4, the last chapter, before we begin the new covenant with Matthew. Folks, that, you know, that's a refresher to me because, as you know, I filled in for John Statler the other night, Thursday night, and it was a good thing because I got a chance to get into the Scriptures again and read, of course, from the previous prophets that we always talk about, and Micah, of course, is one of them. I'm so proud, in the true spiritual sense, to be able to bring forth that word of God that we see all of the prophecies now taking place in incredible ways that we never thought possible even 10 years ago. So I'm thankful for all of this. And today in this first hour, I told you on John's show the other night, and I have mentioned it in the past, we are bringing up a guest who I have never had on this program before, and she is emeritus from, I believe, Temple University. She has written a number of books, about 34 or more of them, and some books that you will find quite fascinating indeed. But the book today that we are going to talk about with her is a book called Blood in the Water. That refers to June 8, 1967, the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty ship in international waters. Our guest is Joan Mellon, and let me see if we can bring her up right now. Hello, Joan, are you there? I believe she is somewhere. Hi, I can hear you now, Joan. How are you?
Good. I'm fine. Looking forward to talking to you.
Yes, thank you very much for coming. And I happen to note that, of course, in your book that has been published among many others, this book fascinates me. It deals with the USS Liberty incident, which, you know, we're all familiar with here on our program. And the book basically points that there was collusion between the Israeli government and the Johnson administration in the attack on this vessel, this unarmed ship in international waters during the Six-Day War. First of all, thank you for writing the book. And secondly, tell me what was the reason that you decided to write this book as well as the others that you've written?
Well, I came to this book because I was writing a book. My previous book was about Lyndon Johnson. And I was writing about Johnson's presidency, among other things, his life in Texas, his crimes and misdemeanors and so forth. Mm-hmm. And on that book was called Faustian Bargains. And it mm-hmm. described all sorts of horrendous relationships that Johnson had with people in the state of Texas. And somebody called me up and said, are you dealing with Johnson's role in the events of the USS Liberty? And I have to confess, this was in, I don't know, 2016, 20, I don't know, I had never heard of the USS Liberty. And I think as I started my research, I found there are many people that don't know about these events. So I looked it up, and there I see that during Johnson's presidency, the ship, the USS Liberty, as you say, Rick, was attacked, and that Johnson, when there was an SOS sent from the ship, it was sinking, was sent to the Sixth Fleet, and they had to, they were asked to send help. It was an SOS. And the admiral of the Sixth Fleet, one of them, sent rescue planes to the site mm-hmm. of where the Liberty was being attacked. And they had to report this to the president since it was an act of war. And mm-hmm. Johnson came back ultimately with the orders, call back those planes. I don't want to embarrass an ally. Well, this is really, mm-hmm. it's a war crime. Here's the president of the United States letting men in battle and under siege die without any help. It was, you know, leave no men on the battlefield unhelped, and that's what he did. And nobody knows about this. Well, not nobody, but many people don't know about it. So that's really where I started. I started in the book Faustian Bargains with a chapter on the Liberty, but I found mm-hmm. that I couldn't write this whole story in one chapter, and so that led me to write a whole book on USS Liberty, which was Blood in the Water. But the part about Johnson is just startling, because he's a war criminal. And then I found out all sorts of things parallel to this, such as that when the sailors of the USS Liberty years later filed a war crime report against Israel, which was quite right, but they didn't mention Johnson. They mm-hmm. still were afraid to attack power. And so even though Johnson was really the criminal that prevented them from being rescued, they didn't even mention his name in the war crimes report, which they filed with the Department of the Army. And it was even though they didn't mention Johnson's name, it was ignored anyway. But they went about it the wrong way. They were asking for the United States government to help them, to give them a hearing, and it turned, how could the United States government give them a hearing when they were the United States government was, as you said, in collusion with Israel on the attack itself? Go ahead, sorry.
Now, I know you established the point in the book, but just for the sake of all people listening now for the first time, how did that collusion work? I mean, Lyndon Johnson, some people, Johnson apologists will say Johnson didn't know and he reacted, you know, in typical fashion. But basically, you go beyond that and you're basically saying and proving, I guess, that Johnson was, in fact, a party to this right from the get-go. Is that what you're saying?
A party to it from the get-go, but you're quite right to raise that question, because, of course, Johnson alone didn't do this. The whole plan to the collusion, the plan, was carried out by the head of CIA's counterintelligence, James Angleton, and the mm-hmm. head of the Mossad, Meir Amit. And my Mossad, most people know, but I'll mention anyway, is the Israeli intelligence services. So they this was all planned a year ahead. And Johnson gets in only at the end, of course, he's all for it, and he wants to help Israel, but really the mastermind of this from the United States side was CIA.
Yes.
Not the whole CIA, because as the story unfolds, we learn that the director of Central Intelligence in 1967, who was Richard Helms, was against mm-hmm. the attack and even opposed it, and later came out against it in television and all kinds of places, films, which is something that was very rare. Helms never came out in public with political views, but on this topic he did. He was so outraged by this, because people like Helms, whatever we want to say, they would never let American soldiers, sailors, die unhelped in the field of battle, used as scapegoats. And those sailors on that ship were used as scapegoats to further the plan, which was to topple Nasser in Egypt. Somehow Nasser was the bête noir at that time of CIA and the Mossad. And so the thing, mm-hmm. they were going to attack Liberty and blame Egypt. That was the whole plan.
Right.
It didn't come out that way. The point was, what they had to do, and they weren't able to do, was to sink the ship. Then they could say anything they wanted, and who would say anything? But here, the ship doesn't sink, and everybody is asking questions, and it becomes a nightmare, really, because it seemed impossible. How could it not sink? Because they even hit the ship with a torpedo. When the Nazis, during World War II, hit ships with torpedoes, they went down. This one doesn't go down. They fire torpedoes, but only one torpedo penetrates the hull of the ship. So that was not enough to hit the boiler. If they'd hit the boiler, even only one would have done it. But it didn't hit the boiler, and so these experienced sailors who had been in World War II were able to keep the ship afloat. And the night of June 8th, nobody helped the ship. It's sinking. It's sort of listing at 10 degrees, but it manages to stay afloat. And by the next morning, when the Sixth Fleet arrives, it's still afloat. And then they decide to send it to dry dock in Malta. There was a much closer place to send it, which was in Crete. But they hoped the government hoped the ship would sink, but it still didn't sink. And it got to Malta. And then, of course, they couldn't stop people from talking. And the sailors were ordered never to say a word about it, never to talk about it among themselves,
yes,
never to talk about it to their families. And after some years, one of the sailors actually wrote a book, and that was Jim Ennis, who wrote a book mm-hmm. called Assault on the Liberty. But mm-hmm. all the writers who've written about it have stayed away from the issue that it really was a collaboration. The attack was a collaboration between the United States and Israel. It would seem too hard to, I don't know why, I mean, well, for my generation, growing up during the Vietnam War, it's different. We'll say anything that's true, whatever we find out. And so I wrote it. I had no idea that I would be harassed like this. I mean, not harassed, but ignored. Ignored.
Mm. Yeah.
I couldn't,
this,
you know,
this reminds me of, you know, the interview that we did last week with Tom Kimmel, eldest living grandson of Admiral Kimmel at Pearl Harbor. If you don't believe it, and you don't believe that there are certain people in this government who are treasonous and who will sacrifice American lives, be they men, women, or children, then look back to Pearl Harbor. You know, and look back at what Roosevelt did and George Marshall did and Truman did later. But, you know, all these characters who knew exactly when the attack was coming, knew where it was coming because of the Operation Magic device that decoded everything, you know. So
That's right.
Another parallel with the USS Liberty on a much smaller scale. But nevertheless, these men were sacrificed, and many died. 34 of them, I guess, sailors were killed at the outset, and then what was it? 174 others, or more, had been seriously injured.
But as the years went by, and various illnesses came out in the people, it was more than 174 that were wounded. And you're right, absolutely, nobody cares. They themselves discovered it. George Golden, who was the chief engineer on the ship, discovered. He said we were scapegoats. They couldn't believe it. He he was Jewish, and he converted and became a Baptist preacher. And people didn't know what to do. It was so disillusioning an experience. And if it were me, I would have quit the military entirely. Some chose other paths. Some went into CIA, and some went into even the United States Secret Service, various jobs. But nobody got over it. It was the defining event of these people's lives, all of them. So you know, I thought I was going to get a medal for this, you know. Rick, I thought, I'm going to be thanked for this. But, you know, you're never thanked for telling the truth.
Well, when you wrote this book, when you wrote the book, were you having any harassment or any kind of interference taking place?
No. No, no, I didn't mean it that way. I meant, to me, harassment means not being reviewed in the New York Times, which is ridiculous.
Well,
what difference does it make?
Ignoring you, yeah.
Yeah, I felt that that was, after all this work, because it was very hard work. It looks easy, maybe, but when you look, every single line is research. I try to write it as a story, as engaging, but really, I had to look up everything, or discover everything, or interview someone, or go to documents, or go to the archives, or find it and piece it all together, because nobody had done it up to this point. And that was so amazing. Here I am. I have no military background. I was a teacher at Temple University, as you mentioned, for 50 years, 5-0. I was teaching creative writing, which means all sorts of topics, but not. I wasn't a historian, a professional historian, and I had to do all that legwork, which I did on my own, and I had to pay for it because, you know, who's going to pay for this? And so I expected, I don't know, laurels, you know, like the Greeks give poets, you know, laurels on, you know, wreaths of honor. I thought I'd done something really important. And you're not thanked. But I don't care about that. I'm only thinking about that now after it's all over. When I was working on it, I just left no stone unturned to try to find documents, archives, people's papers, anything I could find. And when I found out something, I have to tell you, there was one moment when I found out that the former head of the Mossad had tried to censor the book of the son of the CIA station chief in Tel Aviv at the time. And he found this head of the Mossad, his name was Ephraim Halevi. He found out that despite the Mossad's best efforts, the book was published. So they tried to stop publication secretly. He remarked, "I thought we had taken care of that." Mm-hmm. And the person who told me that was the author of the book, told me not to use it. And I have to say, in that case, I overwrote him and I used it. It's very rare, after all the research, that you get truth like that. It's the actual truth right from the horse's mouth. And I was not going to let it go.
Right. You know, I have often brought this up to others. You know, Grace Halsell, who was a press secretary for Lyndon Johnson, you know, had similar thoughts that you had. And she actually wrote two books. When she left the administration years later, she's passed on now, but Grace Halsell wrote one book that was very remarkable, Journey to Jerusalem. And when she went there, she found out some astonishing things. She also was kind of miffed and upset that Johnson was so much involved in the cover-up of the USS Liberty, and that she, you know, she came out and wrote about it and spoke about it in her books. And so, like you said, not everyone in the administration or in any agency is part of the corruption. There are some good people still left here and there, and these are the ones who usually speak out but are never heard, you know. So,
right. Well, I'm sorry I didn't know about that book, because I would have quoted it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can read about it. You can go online and get it, you know, copies of it.
Her book is also covered up. Because in all the
books
I've read, and things, I'd never seen a reference to it. So that's one way to obliterate people when they're telling inconvenient truths.
Right. And it is inconvenient because, let's face it, you know, we had the Pueblo incident just months later in 1968, I believe, and we saw that the North Vietnamese could probably laugh and say, well, look, you know, if it can happen to the Liberty, why can't we just take this vessel here, you know, and get away with it?
Many people, many people felt that it made the Pueblo vulnerable. And, you know, we have other incidents of like this, false flag operations, they're called. That was the Gulf of Tonkin.
Right. All right, let's pause for a minute here.
Okay.
And, Joan, we have to take a break for commercials. We'll be back in about 3 minutes to continue our interview with Joan Mellon, folks. Blood in the Water. Rick Adams on Censored.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
What have you done? Thousands of years of building and rebuilding, creating and recreating so you can let it crumble to dust. A million years, the sensitive men dying for their dreams. For what? So you can swim and dance and play.
And folks, we're back now with Joan Mellon, who wrote the book, and we're just, trying to give a thumbnail sketch of what the book is all about. And as you said, Joan, you have written many other books in a wide range of topics, but you also, in particular, relate to this book in your previous books in the CIA and the JFK assassination. So it seems as if this guy, Angleton, was a number three man at the CIA for a while, and he was in direct contact with Ben-Gurion, I guess, and others in Israel. Is that right?
Yes, Angleton occupied at the CIA what was called the Israel desk, and anything that had to do with Israel went through him. And nobody could receive any information in Israel without his okay. And he was friendly with somebody called Teddy Kollek, who had been the mayor of Jerusalem, I think. And he had various assets in Israel that he dealt with. And he really operated on his own without any he was not answerable to anybody in the U.S. government, even in CIA. And Alan Dulles and Richard Helms knew him from the beginning and pretty much let him alone to do whatever he wanted. And he was, as the years came on, he was increasingly deranged. And he was hysterical, obsessed by the Cold War, anti-communist, anti-Russian. And he used that as an excuse to really control CIA, and as much the politics. Here he is, an unelected official making war, making policy for the United States, answerable to no one. And Lyndon Johnson signs on because it's in his interests. And this goes on. Luckily for us, I think Johnson, because of the protests against the war in Vietnam, Johnson has to back out, and he couldn't run again in 1968, but God knows what else he would have done. At the culmination of the attack on the USS Liberty, the United States government activated the Strategic Air Command, and planes came out on the runways. This is the night before the attack. And should the attack have gone forward, the ship sank, and as a result, some encounter occur. Well, the United States was then going to bomb Cairo, which is well documented, and then maybe the Soviets would get angry and bomb Israel or bomb something in Tel Aviv, and then we would use that as an excuse for nuclear war against Russia. So Johnson's legacy would have been World War III with a vengeance, nuclear World War III, and they did send planes to Cairo. And at the very last minute, I think it was 7 minutes before they reached their target, they were called back because the ship didn't sink. And the SOS went out. But the Israelis were monitoring the entire thing. And the planes were sent to Cairo by the Admiral, the Chief of the Sixth Fleet, whose name was Admiral William Inman Martin. I have his photograph in the book. And then, just to go flash forward a little bit, after all this was over, and he had to cover up his own role, he came out and gave a speech in Virginia in which he said that the Liberty was not a spy ship. Everybody knew it was a spy ship. Nobody doubted it. Mm-hmm. It was not unarmed. This is an unarmed ship, as you said, in international waters, unarmed. So now he's saying that it was not a spy ship. I mean, he just lied. Lying was second nature to these people. They would have said anything, the same way that the Israelis were constantly saying in the decade before this that Nasser was saying that the wanted to drive Israel into the sea. Nasser never said that. He wanted to coexist with Israel. It's Israel that was constantly making war with Nasser. And, of course, Israel was the aggressor in the Six-Day War. Mm-hmm. This is known.
And now, ironically, we have this a president who, is like a putty in the hands of Netanyahu and Adelson, and basically has said, whatever you occupy, you can have. You can take, regardless of the consequences for America and the world. So, I mean, you know, we've come full circle. And Kennedy, from our reading of history, I'm sure, and you mentioned it a little bit in the book, but Kennedy was not happy about Dimona. And he was not very pleased with Israel having the first nukes in the Middle East, though they claimed they would not be the first to have them. And this,
which was a lie.
Yeah, sure.
But yes, Kennedy definitely wanted an even-handed approach to the Arab countries and to Israel. And, of course, Israel was hysterical that so much American aid was going to Egypt and other Middle Eastern countries. And that was some of the impetus of the events that occurred in the decade before. And I describe the antecedent of the attack on the Liberty, which was something called Operation Susanna in Egypt, which was Israeli intelligence recruiting Egyptian Jews, young ones, to create terrorist incidents and to use that to destabilize Egypt so that the United States would retract its aid to Egypt.
Yeah, the Levant affair comes to mind. Yes.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Right. Right. We'll take a break and we'll be back with our guest, Joan Mullen, and we will do that, folks, after this break. Rick Adams on set.
You You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Can man control his destiny? Can he change the shape of things to come?
And we're back now with our guest, Joan Mellon, and we're talking, obviously, about the USS Liberty incident in particular, tying some threads together here with our guest about the commonality of the linkage of the CIA and the people involved in the CIA, going back to the Office of Strategic Services. And, you know, you just talked, Joan, a moment about the Levant affair and Operation Susanna, so forth. It is amazing how the plan of action, you say, was conceived of a year before it actually took place. You know, and how was that going? Tell our audience how that happened. Who was directly involved in planning this event?
Good question. Excellent. Well, what was how it was planned, that, because that was my point. No other book had discussed how did this start? How did it come that Israel and the United States would collaborate on this murderous operation? And what I found was that there was a committee attached to the executive branch of the federal government. It was called the 303 Committee. And this committee was designed to discuss and to plan operations that would that it would take the blame for, so that the executive, the president, would not be held responsible, that he would have plausible deniability. And so the 303 committee met, and they discussed the plan to attack the Liberty and to attack Egypt and to remove Nasser, the key was to topple Nasser. And no one had discovered. I went to the National Archives. There was a team report by the Joint Chiefs of Staff had set up a committee to investigate the incident of the USS Liberty. And in their own report, most of the serious stuff was redacted. But on page 6, if you look at it, you'll see that it says that the 303 Committee and Cyrus Vance placed the Liberty up there in the East Mediterranean off the coast of Egypt. Mm-hmm. And they had forgotten, or somehow they missed, removing that sentence that was so crucial to telling us how this came about. And I was so amazed. There it is. It's, anyone can find it. They had neglected to redact it. And no other book, no other author had found it. It was amazing because if you're studying the USS Liberty, one of the things you'll do is look at all the literature, including the reports of the government agencies like the Joint Chiefs. And so that really was a tremendous breakthrough for me. It was a great, like a bright light suddenly shines, and I was able to see what happened there. And you can see that certainly what the Israelis said after the event, it was an accident, it was a mistake, they thought it was an Egyptian freighter, the why they would fire on an Egyptian horse freighter is ridiculous, but that's what they said. And here we have evidence of the planning of the attack. And even the sailors on the ship never knew that. And I found out later, I went to see a person who was the head of the intelligence office of the State Department at the time. His name was Thomas Lowe Hughes. And he knew that, he knew many things, but he knew that Lyndon Johnson and Cyrus Vance had been collaborators since the 1930s on various nefarious schemes. And so it was perfectly logical that Johnson would put Cyrus Vance onto the 303 committee to represent him and to carry out this plan against the USS Liberty.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Cy Vance, because as you probably know, when it was time to go to Democrat again, after the Ford presidency, after Nixon's resignation, the name of Cyrus Vance and Zbigniew Brzezinski came up. Jimmy Carter actually said, and I quote, on the campaign trail in 75, he said, if you were to see a Cyrus Vance as Secretary of State in my administration and as a Zbigniew Brzezinski as National Security Advisor, you will know that I have failed the American people. And guess which two he appointed?
I know, that's right. That's incredible. Well, I did some research on Brzezinski in the Kennedy assassination, and I find out that he was recruited by CIA when he was a student.
Yes.
And then he was one of, he never admitted that he had been, he was a CIA operative for years and years and years. It was very hard to come by those documents, but they somehow leaked out.
Well, wasn't he involved in Polish-Soviet espionage, too, at one point, going
well,
way
yeah,
back?
Well, yeah, you know, he was part of the Cold War. And, and ever since he had been a student, and then, of course, he get his foothold, as you say, in the American government and the Carter administration. That's what he's famous
amazing.
For.
What is it they say? The more things change, the more they remain what?
Well, it's disheartening, isn't it? Very disheartening. But
you mentioned people like Dick Helms and so forth, but, you know, Helms, I believe, came out of the CFR mold, the Council on Foreign Relations. We have Richard Haass, who's president of the CFR, and no matter what Mr. Trump says or any president says, you find out that there's already a gang of people who influence and control, and the word influence is used guardedly, of course, these administrative appointments. You know, you don't just become Secretary of State and not have any affiliation with the elite. You don't just become one of the cabinet members in any of these positions, National Security Advisor, and so on and so forth. You wind up coming from that little pool of people who just happen to have a very strong, ability to anchor America into one crisis after another. And they go from crisis to crisis, war to war, conflict to conflict, and they recruit a lot of young, unknowing, idealistic young people to go in and fight. And in the end, many of them lose their lives, and their families are broken up and so forth. And it really is tragedy, but this is reality time. And, you know, what you're saying is not very welcome for the power structure here. We have what I think you would agree, we have today a military, industrial, media, political empire, a syndrome.
Don't forget the intelligence.
As never before.
Well, yes, and in fact, the Council on Foreign Relations, as you say, was actually a tool of Alan Dulles in his days, you know, when he was with CIA.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so now, whenever I talk to certain people about Council on Foreign Relations, it's like saying CIA. So when Richard Hobbs, for example, comes on Morning Joe every other day and gives he just presented as a writer, he wrote this book, and an independent thinker, but actually he sits there for CIA. So how can you look
right.
at any of these television cable stations and think of them as independently knowledgeable and interested only in the truth when they represent interests?
I know. I remember years ago when I was growing up, it was Meet the Press, Issues and Answers, Face the Nation, and all of that. And the same experts, quote unquote, would come on every week. It was a revolving door of the elite, of the power structure, of the CFR, and so on and so forth, the Rockefeller cabal, you know. And that's all the American people were allowed to see. There were no independent programs, you know, that existed pre-internet days. And now, you know, we are very fortunate in these times in which we live to be able to research and discuss these issues, because they will not be discussed in most of the mainstream media, as we like to say. You say so? That's what.
MSM.
Yeah, go ahead. Say something.
I was just going to say, a friend of mine wrote me a note, and he said the MSM, the mainstream media, will not discuss this. That's right. That's all I wanted to say.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, you get somebody like, I call him Lion Brian. I was saying that like 8 or 9 years ago before Brian Williams got nabbed and he had to be demoted. And, you know, I refer to Lying Lester and a whole host of others. But, you know, it's amazing how fortuitous and how precognitive I was of these things, because it's like, you know, if they will lie about their service and where they were during the war and how valuable they were to the American media corps, what else will they lie about? And the thing is, they don't just lie by commission. It's the lie of omission that bothers most of all. What they don't tell you.
They don't tell the truth if they know it. That's right, I agree. And one of the big issues that this was true of course, was the Kennedy assassination. And that's why I wanted to write about that. And so I took the unenviable assignment of writing a biography of Jim Garrison and his investigation in New Orleans and retracing it and seeing what he did and whom he saw and what leads he had and what happened to him. And boy, I mean, because the government had already issued documents saying to writers to attack Garrison. So here I come some years later. Now they can attack me as being the biographer of Garrison. And I think that started it for me that New York Times would not review anything I wrote after that. And I had all the credentials. I wrote many books. They were all scholarly, but nothing doing. My literary biographies that I'd written earlier, like Kay Boyle, Lillian Hellman, Dashiell Hammett, who were communists, that was okay. And they reviewed all of that, although not favorably. But when it came time to these political issues, I wrote a book about Haiti. I wrote a book about Cuba, and especially the Garrison.
Yes.
So I'm just kind of worn out in a way. They can wear you out. It's hard to keep on doing it year after year.
Well, no, but you see, the work is done, and one thing is, it's not erasable. You know, people can access it, and I was going to ask you in the meantime, what kind of response and receptivity and progress have you made in selling this particular book?
Well, it was sold to Audible, which means you could buy it on tape, and that was an independent sale, and nobody interfered with that. And you can buy it on Amazon.com. You can read about it on my website, which is joanmellon.com, M-E-L-L-E-N. You can, it sells, and you can get reviews here and places, all kinds of places, and just be happy with that. Stop aspiring to be part of the MSM, mainstream media, because you're not going to be, because these are not ideas that are generally acceptable. This is not, as you said earlier, Rick, this is not what the government wants you to know, and they certainly don't want you to know that a president of the United States left behind these young sailors, 17 years old, 18 years old, who had done nothing, who were unarmed, and Israel and the United States together had a plan to throw the cast them to the bottom of the sea. It's horrendous, and a lot of shrapnel, and then to have a naval inquiry, which was superintended by the father of John McCain, the former senator, deceased.
Yeah, yeah.
His father was in charge of the fake naval inquiry, which lied
about what
happened, and they got the captain of the ship, Captain McGonagall, to lie and minimize the attack. He said it was 8 minutes, it was really an hour and a half or whatever, and just to make it seem, to paper it over, and to do a quick inquiry in 1 week. They didn't go to Israel. They didn't ask and do any interviews with anyone else. And they left out key facts, such as the fact that the Israeli torpedo boats used machine guns to shoot up the life rafts that at a certain point had been thrown into the water by the ship because they were preparing to abandon ship. And then you put the life rafts in the water. I mean, the Israeli torpedo boats grabbed one of the life rafts and dragged it off as a souvenir that they then put in a naval museum in Israel. Incredible. And this is a war crime, needless to say. And nobody ever said a thing about it. And it was left out of the report. And then I have to say also that there wasn't the chief of naval operations, whose name was Admiral McDonald, David Lamar McDonald, was against all of this. They sent the ship up there behind his back. He didn't know about it. And when he saw it, they were forced to show the naval inquiry, the text of it to him. And he took out a red pen and he started changing things. And of course, he tried to make it honest, which was impossible to do at that point. And of course, they ignored him. And he left the Navy shortly after that. And the irony, he knew this field well. He had been a commander of the Sixth Fleet earlier in his career. And now he was at this apex, the chief of naval operations, and this is the disrespect that he was given. So Johnson and all the rest of them, they didn't care. They didn't have any respect. And we see that today in the government with disrespect of people and lack of courtesy, lack of civility, lack of democratic debate, anything. And as long as these incidents like the Liberty are ignored and left to fester, they lead to a deterioration of the entire culture of the government. And that's what we've got today, lying, cheating, talking about fake news, accusing people of things that, and who's to say otherwise?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's right. That's right. And the unfortunate thing is that many of those young volunteers to go into the service are not even aware of the long list of betrayal that took place, by their predecessors, the number of people not only that were killed outright in these wars in the past century, but those that came back as half people. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but I mean in the amputees and the sickness and all of the mental problems they've had and so forth and difficulty living and family life. All of these things were the progeny of these wars. So these younger people today who decide it's the heroic thing to do, to get involved with the military and get involved with saving America from the latest enemy, unfortunately, most are not aware of it. And I don't even know if they even give it a second thought because they're deluded. It's very easy to be in a euphoric sense and idealistic, Joan. And unfortunately, that's part of human nature as well.
Well, yeah, and if you notice, I don't know if you noticed in the last few years, I don't know if you're a sports fan, but if you notice how the military has infiltrated even professional sports, the NFL, the NBA, and somehow there are military figures appear at the games, and much is made of the flag, and all that is done to prepare people to join these wars. That's right. Because they had to get people to believe in it, because there's no longer a draft, and they're going to get people to go, and whatever happens is suppressed. The incidents of murder, suicide, and so forth. So, we've seen that in films. There have been films made, but somehow they just passed over, and they keep on going, and there's not enough opposition. People are terrified, and I think you can see this even in the government. The people in the government, many of them would know better, they're terrified of what this government is going to do to them and create primaries against them in the next election and take away their money or whatever. And so, nobody says anything.
That's right. They want their pensions, and they say, oh, don't worry about it. My children, my grandchildren will have to worry about it. Like, they don't even care about their own progeny, you know, and that's sad. That they're willing to just put it all aside, put it on a shelf, and say, let somebody else worry about it. I fought my battles. To me, that's just selfishness, and I can't do that. And that's why I do programs like this, you see, and why we need to continue to inform people. For whoever has ears to hear and eyes to see and who really care, we need to do that for their sake. There are people who will hear you and hear me, and it doesn't matter. It goes in one ear and out the same. All right.
We'll come back. You never know.
Yeah, we'll come right back, though, with you. Stay tuned, Joan, and Rick Adams on Center.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations. A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands. And a week into using Extendivite, my numb hand seemed to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Extendivite. Haven't you got any respect for this town?
I just lost it.
See, the vigilantes are a mob. These badges make us legal. We're the law. And the law has the right to shoot up a mob.
Well, I guess so, huh? I guess might makes for right. That's what they told me. Yeah? Well, not really. We have our guest, Joan, here, has written a book, Blood in the Water. I remember the BBC documentary,
dead in the water many years ago, Joan, and there have been a number of programs overseas, primarily, and books written about the Liberty, or including the chapter about the Liberty. And I'm going to take a call. I may hold you over a few minutes if you have time, but I am going to take the call in a minute. I did want to mention and ask you about the relationship between two key figures in the Johnson administration, from Kennedy. Well, I don't know if they were still there at the time, but we did have, as you know, Dean Rusk from Kennedy, and Dean Rusk was interviewed later, and apparently he did not agree with anything the Johnson administration would say about the Liberty being an accident. And then, of course, we had Bob McNamara, Secretary of Defense in the previous administration. What do you have to say about those two?
Well, McNamara was the rubber stamp for the attack on the Liberty for Johnson. And when the admirals decided to send help to the Liberty, the first person they had to call was the Secretary of Defense, McNamara. McNamara told them, call back those planes. And then the admiral, listening to this, he couldn't do it because he couldn't leave the men struggling out there. And he said, I don't have to listen to you. And at that point, McNamara handed the phone to Lyndon Johnson. So Johnson really didn't intend to talk at all to the admiral, but when they refused to honor McNamara's orders, which were horrendous, horrible, then so Johnson gets on the phone and he says, call back those planes. And that southern drawl, it's unmistakable. Johnson's voice was unmistakable.
He also used some colorful language, I'm told, as well.
Probably. He was really a hateful man, and I can't understand why his biographer, Robert Caro, persists in writing that Johnson cared about civil rights. And when we know that he used certain words, certain talking about language, all the time against black people, and was a horrible racist. And then they defending him, that he really cared about the Civil Rights Bill and all of that. He did it because he thought that he could make his reputation on it. And that he was going to, he even said he was going to put Kennedy's civil rights ideas into practice. That was one of the first things he said when he became president. Many people believe that Johnson had some foreknowledge of the Kennedy assassination. I don't write that because I haven't got proof. Everything I wrote and write in my book is supported by facts. So I'm not going to go, maybe he did, maybe we suspected, but I'm not going to say that.
Right, right. And folks, by the way, the book obviously is available. You can go to her site. And I'd like to have you tell us now before the break your site and the book and how they can order.
You can order Blood in the Water by Joan Mellon, spelled M-E-L-L-E-N, at Amazon.com. And you can see many interviews and things about it on my website, which is one word, JoanMellon.com. Where it's all
right.
Free, of course. And I think if you want to know more about it, I hope everybody will.
All right, I'll hold you over for about 10 minutes, okay, until the next hour, if you can stay. I do have a call, and I want to invite the caller to please to stay on the topic of the USS Liberty, and that's the only request I make right now because it's pertinent. We can go on for hours just on this, folks. All right, we'll come back, 800-313-9443. Just a few minutes more with Joan. Rick Adams, Uncensored.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.